America's number one show on pop culture and politics. This is The Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. A great nation, despite the fact that we have a great problem, and it's a national problem, but it's particularly acute here in the city of Seattle. The problem of homelessness. I was noticing, by the way, that one of our candidates for mayor in the city of Seattle, Lorena Gonzalez, doesn't use the term homeless, doesn't use the term people without conventional housing. She uses the term our unhoused neighbors. Isn't that sound nice? Our unhoused neighbors. It's a disaster, and we had a number of stories that we were going to share with you about the homeless situation. But during the break here, during the top of the hour news and the commercials and that, I mentioned to you earlier that we have some house guests who are visiting here from Israel, and wonderful young people, and the house guests, and I mention no names, just went out this morning with our daughter Sarah to look a little bit at downtown Seattle and to look at the waterfront, which is in the process of being completely redone because they took down the viaduct and they built a tunnel underneath and they're going to put a park on top of it. For people who don't know Seattle, someday, perhaps long after many of us are gone, they may be actually finished with this job, and maybe right before they finish the light rail where they have basically fired the longtime director because there's a little bit of problem with getting things done on time. Okay. What the reason I'm mentioning our out-of-town visitors who never really toured Seattle before was I told them as they went out this morning on their expedition, okay, you're going downtown, you're going to be shocked because there's a really, really big problem with homeless people. And I know they heard me, okay, how bad can it be kind of thing. Well, the our house guests just came back and they were assaulted by a homeless guy today while I was on the air. I feel terrible for having failed them, not having been, because, you know, you get used to it. But this was a situation. We have three young people who are walking down the street. And one of them is wearing a cap, and like a baseball kind of cap. And he was walking down the street, and he was dealing with a business call and talking that way, and he didn't see a homeless guy came up to him with a sort of a handout and not specifically asking for money. But then as he approached, he basically swiped his hand at his head, knocked the cap down, and then the apparently... And again, I wasn't there, but I got a pretty good description just moments ago. And then apparently, as the wife of the male part of this group, the wife reached down, and by the way, they're newlyweds, and just the most lovely people you can imagine. But as she came down, he picked up the hat. She had gone down to try to pick it up, and then she fell and scraped her hand, and this guy just walked away. And okay, it could be much worse, obviously, but for God's sake, think about the message. I mean, you know, we've lived in this city for 25 years, and to see this, you know, when you're out on what is a gorgeous day today, and such a gorgeous city, and so much of this garbage everywhere, and this kind of behavior, and I guarantee you this isn't the first problem that this individual has caused. And it is completely nutty. Completely nutty. Jeremy has a message. And so I was talking about Seattle finishing the light rail, which is going to be sometime in the future. They're, I think, about a decade late or behind schedule. Maybe not quite that much. But they may finish the light rail even before they remove the homeless camp from the public school. Here is a Como News report from Como TV about an outreach group which is helping to rehouse people living at the homeless encampment, which they were trying and begging. Come on, school is coming back into session. This is a K through 8 school, and for goodness sake. And yet they have a homeless encampment right behind it, right there. But here's the way that progress is going on removing the homeless camp behind the North Seattle Public School. Clip 1A.
The district is working hand in hand with the city, and they realize this could take more time.
And I've been here at this camp for the last 3 months.
Living behind Broadview Thompson, K through 8 is returning to a place 26-year-old Adam Fournier has been before.
I went here when I was younger. You know, I was here from 4th to 5th grade. You know, I was a part of the community. I know people in the community.
He's not the only one living at this encampment that's attended school here and is now waiting for housing.
Housing will help me a lot. Like, by then I can get an actual good job, like, you know, actually start my life back up.
But Adam knows he needs to face his opioid addiction first.
I hate it, honestly. Like, I really do. But like I said, it's a ball and chain. If I don't have it, I'm not well, and I can't be productive.
Okay, this is a guy who seems to be articulate. Did you hear what he's saying? He's saying that, well, he would like to get a job, but he can't get a job until he gets a house, and he can't get a house, and he can't do anything until he does something about his opioid addiction. By the way, this began in April. Then school ended. Then school began in September. That's now. This is unbelievable. And you feel sorry for this guy, but honestly, the combination of indulgence. Why is it, again, this guy who's waiting to cure his opioid addiction is exactly who you want to have living right behind your students in kindergarten, first grade, second grade, who are going to school there every day. This is about the team that's supposed to be a help team to get rid of the homeless encampment at the school. Clip 1.
There's just no easy way to, you know, solve this issue.
Mike Mathias leads Anything Helps, the organization Seattle Public Schools has partnered with to rehouse the remaining 54 people living at the camp. Since July, they say they've helped 52 people transition out of the encampment that's been here more than a year.
There's just been a lot of different transformative types of interventions that we've been able to supply people, and I think it's important that people know that.
The city's Hope team is now here helping too, offering the few shelter options that are now available. Mid-October is when Mathias says the district had hoped people would be rehoused, but today that's looking unlikely.
We're asking for some more time, and we'll see if we get more time, but I don't know if that's going to take place.
Adam hopes that's the case, because he believes permanent housing could be the start that could change his life.
I wouldn't put it on anybody to have to go through the situation.
Okay, how do you get permanent housing? I mean, for those of you who are not our unhoused neighbors, right? For those of you who are not homeless, do you have permanent housing? I mean, I guess people, if you own your up, it basically it's part of which you work to get housing. And you don't depend upon a help team. By the way, so there's no easy solution. I bet you could think of some easy solutions. And I'm not talking about anything violent. I'm talking about something sane, like cleaning out the damn homeless encampment. We'll be right back.
MedVed.
In my opinion, he's the most powerful man in the world.
This is the Michael MedVed Show.
more, unfortunately. And it's just so sad, and it's so appalling. And again, when you talk about, as we were earlier in the show, about people losing faith in American institutions, in anything that's happening in America right now, a large part of it has to do with the intractability, the inability for our political leadership, of our civic leadership, our business leadership, to do anything meaningful about the infestation, and it is an infestation, of bums. And I'm sorry, that's what we're talking about. We're not talking about unhoused neighbors. The guy who just assaulted our young married, first year of their marriage couple visiting us, while they were visiting Seattle, this is not an unhoused neighbor. I'm sorry. This is a creep and a bum. And I don't think he is unrepresentative of the general so-called homeless population. Do we have another story, and it's a brief story, but it's a kind of direct and meaningful one. This one first from the six-year report. 6 years have passed now since the city of Portland, which I think exists primarily so that Seattleites don't have to feel so bad. The city of Portland, KATU, a local ABC affiliate in Portland, is reporting about what's happened in the last 6 years since the mayor, Charlie Hales, at that time, declared a civic emergency. How has that gone in terms of handling this homeless crisis? Listen.
Homeless issues. We don't have enough affordable housing for folks. We don't have enough mental health care for folks.
And after 6 years, still don't have an answer. Today marks a half a dozen years since Portland declared a homeless crisis and an emergency. And many look around Portland now and see the crisis has only worsened. Good evening. Thanks for staying with us. I'm Deborah Knapp.
And I'm Lincoln Graves, in for Steve Dunn. It was Mayor Charlie Hales that made the emergency declaration in 2015. But the problem persists. K2's Genevieve Rayom is live downtown. And Genevieve, people there say they...
Exactly, Lincoln. We walked around Pioneer Courthouse Square this afternoon to talk with Portlanders and ask them what they think has changed over the past 6 years since Portland officially declared the homeless crisis an emergency. And for the most part, people here are just disappointed.
We have a crisis. We have a crisis both in continued unsheltered homelessness and in rapidly eroding housing affordability.
Then Mayor Charlie Hales made this declaration 6 years ago to the day, saying the homeless crisis had escalated to an emergency.
I don't think that we can solve all of Portland's homelessness or housing problems overnight.
Not overnight, and not even over several years. Do you think the city has made any progress in handling that emergency?
It doesn't look like it. You'll be walking down the streets and people are doing heroin.
Some say drugs are to blame, others finances.
I know it's difficult to find funding for this crisis right now, but it should have happened like 6 years ago.
To many, the problem has clearly worsened, but others acknowledge the magnitude of the crisis facing city leaders.
And I think they're doing the best that they can against a problem that's nearly insurmountable.
Commissioner Mingus Mapp says his council is being innovative, searching for solutions.
Commissioner Dan Ryan is actually doing some really historic and heroic work around standing up six new safe rest villages around the city.
But is that enough? Not to all.
Okay. It clearly isn't enough. I mean, the situations here, everywhere. There's another story I mentioned. There's a story from Los Angeles. This is the one from Los Angeles. As reported by CBS, local affiliate CBSN in Los Angeles. No one was wounded after a man opened fire on a Shake Shack restaurant in Canoga Park yesterday afternoon. According to LAPD, the suspect, a homeless man, had entered the restaurant prior to the shooting and caused a disturbance, which prompted employees to ask him to please leave. He left, but then after exiting the restaurant, he returned and opened fire on it. Police said there were about 20 people inside at the time, including a 10-year-old child, but fortunately no one was hit. The suspect, later identified as 25-year-old Sebastiano Cummings Cruz, hyphenated, ran from the scene but was captured a short time later, police said. Cummings Cruz was taken into custody on suspicion of attempted murder. It's unclear exactly what kind of gun was used or whether it was recovered by investigators. Look, this is not a problem of a gun. It is a problem of a homeless nut who should not, or Pete, not be returned to the streets. And the answer is not providing them with nice little tiny houses or little housing villages. Maybe that can work for some small percentage of this population, but it won't work for anybody if we continue to allow people to camp en masse in public parks, on sidewalks, and afflicting everyone. Everyone. There's this also, this breaking news. Another homeless camp fire marks number 952 in Seattle this year. Okay, this is not a homeless campfire. It's a homeless camp fire. The number of homeless encampment fires in Seattle continues to climb. Another explosive blaze torched part of a homeless camp at Green Lake yesterday morning. I woke up from a loud explosion, said Arthur McNeil, who lives at the camp. Within moments, McNeil said he lost everything he owned. Another homeless campfire marks number 952 in Seattle this year. Can we explain that? That's more than three a day. Three a day. I'll pick up the pieces and start over, said Arthur McNeil. McNeil's tent was one of three that went up in flames around 9 a.m., damaging two big trees steps away from the shores of Green Lake. It is much more serious if you're damaging two big trees at Green Lake, which is one of our precious public parks in the city of Seattle. Thursday's fire was the second at this growing homeless camp. Drager says he's desperately trying to connect folks at the camp to caseworkers. What, to give them another homeless encampment? We'll be right back on the MedVed Show. I can't believe this.
It's outrageous what's going on out here.
The Michael MedVed Show. Yes, the pandemic is coming to an end. Restrictions are coming to an end. But body aches and picks to pop culture. And from coast to coast, this is the Michael MedVed Show.
And on the Michael MedVed Show, talking about the fire number 952. You can't even give these names, these fires in homeless encampments. And is somebody setting them? I mean, how can you have 952 fires? This one apparently followed some kind of explosion, like it sounds like a bomb or something like that. I woke up from a loud explosion, said one of the residents of the homeless encampment at Green Lake. Now, again, for people who don't know Seattle, Green Lake is north of downtown, and it's in a beautiful residential neighborhood. It's near a series of city parks. The zoo is not far away. It's a wonderful place where families can go, rich, poor, families of every background. And people love to walk around the lake. It's a couple of miles if you do a complete circuit of the lake, and it's a beautiful walk. And there are bike lanes, and it's really, it's a wonderful place to go. It's a wonderful place to show off the city. There's a nice view of downtown from nearby. I mean, and the fact that there's a growing homeless encampment at Green Lake, it's, and the two large trees were damaged by this fire that went up in smoke. Bruce Drager is with the Green Lake Homeless Advocates. Can we aim for a situation where there wouldn't even be a group called Green Lake Homeless Advocates? The idea that there are going to be people advocating for people who are living on the streets, setting up their tents, getting free tents as they were for a while from REI and other places. I mean, honest to God, what are we talking about here? Where do we go with this? You have a situation in Portland. They had an emergency declared 6 years ago. You remember Barack Obama, the president of the United States, had declared that he would put an end to homelessness, and he had a program. It was an end within 10 years. And that was right after he'd taken over. That would have been 2019. We should have been done with homelessness. I mean, honest to goodness. The Bruce Drager, who was with Green Lake Homeless Advocates, said it's coming to a boiling point. Absolutely. This is a clear indication. He's talking about fire number 952 this year. Thursday's fire was the second of the growing homeless camp, just 1 week marking 952 encampment fires in Seattle in 2021. Drager says he's desperately trying to connect folks at the camp to caseworkers. Well, that'll fix everything. Unfortunately, we've just been absolutely inundated with this population of folks from over the last month or so. So we've gone from 50 to 300 people. They have 300 people living at a homeless camp in Green Lake now? Doesn't that get people outraged? He attributes the increase in campers to sweeps that have happened at other camps. Oh, great. Me personally, I need housing. You know, I'm a worker. I'm a student, said McNeil. Yeah, if he's a worker and he needs housing, usually if you're a worker, you're getting money for it. And you can turn that money into housing somewhere. Maybe you don't get to live in downtown Seattle, but you live somewhere. The challenge right now, very little housing and shelter is available. And many neighbors say Green Lake and Upper Woodland is not the appropriate place for the unhoused. It is definitely not the appropriate place for the unhoused. It's one of the most used popular city parks with families and children who should be able to enjoy a park without hypodermic needles scattered everywhere, without assaults from bums. Kimberly Mattler, who was walking around Green Lake on Thursday, said, I think the city has a lot of responsibility in terms of not only helping them, but keeping them out of the park and the environment safe for everybody. Okay, is it really the city's responsibility to provide housing, or is it the city's responsibility to keep bums and vagrants and destruction out of our parks? I mean, I think go back to the two large trees there that were damaged at Green Lake by this fire at a homeless encampment. If somebody had done that, say an anti-environmental extremist, I don't know if such a thing exists, someone had come up and deliberately damaged two large trees, do you know, the left would be outraged, and rightly so. Rightly so. Green Lake's homeless encampment, according to Cairo, includes 68 tents and 18 structures. I can only imagine what kind of structures they are. Then a another report says Green Lake has 52 tents, 3 structures, 11 RVs, and 12 cars. Neighbors' frustrations are mounting. The city says this area is on a priority list. Okay, how is it on a priority list if the population has grown from, what was it, 30 to 300? I mean, how do you allow 20 tents and 10 tents? And I mean, for God's sake, you've got to control the streets. You've got to control whose streets? Our streets? Whose streets? Our streets? That's taxpayers. That's people who actually work for a living and knock themselves out. And by the way, to get even a very modest home in the Green Lake neighborhood, which is a lovely neighborhood, to get a home in the Green Lake neighborhood now, it's not easy. And it shouldn't be free for people to camp there. Man, my God. This week, a video tweet from Cairo 7 showed protesters demanding removal of large homeless camps from city parks. They were met by counter-protesters, mostly shouting and cursing. A dog bit somebody. A sign ripped up. Some kids and parents were chased away. This is before it got heated, but tension on this issue was at a fever pitch. Yeah, I guess the summer of love is over. I mean, who's going to counter-protest? Really? Who's going to counter-protest against trying to get homeless encampments out of city parks? Okay, let's make this an election issue and see how the people decide. And let Bruce Harrell, who is the more sane of the Seattle City Council candidates, let him make it clear that he agrees with people who are protesting who want homeless encampments out of city parks. And let the other side stand with the idea that, oh, no. We can't clear homeless encampments out of city parks. They have a right to be there. No, they do not. Where does this idea even come from? And where does this lead us? It's a extraordinarily depressing situation. And I hate to go into the weekend on this, but we do have some movies, a couple of which are pretty good. It's a film with Clint Eastwood. He directed it, starred us in it. The Broadway hit Dear Evan Hansen in a film version, and a film biography of Tammy Faye Baker. Remember her? That and more coming up on The Medved Show. And on The Michael Medved Show, Clint Eastwood is such a supremely talented guy. I mean, he does everything for his movies, produces, directs, and often writes the music. He has a new film out, and he's getting on to 90. So getting to that and other developments from Hollywood, fanfare please. The Clint Eastwood film is called Cry Macho, and it's one of those things where when you see it, it's playing in theaters and it's streaming on HBO Max. When you see it, you kind of wonder, where did this come from? And why now? And I'll tell you, because you might not otherwise know, or certainly you wouldn't tell by watching the film. There was a screenwriter who tried to sell a screenplay in 1975. I mean, really, it's that long ago. Yeah, almost 50 years ago. And nobody wanted to get by the screenplay at the time. So he turned it into a novel. The novel was fairly successful. And then for many years, people were interested in making it into a movie using the screenplay. At one point, Arnold Schwarzenegger was attached to the project. They didn't make it with Arnold Schwarzenegger. They made it with Clint Eastwood. And it's a story of a sort of has-been aging rodeo star who is asked to perform a rescue for a teenage boy who is with his mother after separating from the father. The father is an old friend of the rodeo star. Clint Eastwood is a rodeo star, of course, and he is asked to go down to Mexico City to rescue this boy and bring him back to the States. Listen.
Get in the back.
We go and I tell you, okay?
Look, the only place you're gonna go is the hospital.
You get too angry. It's not good for you. You used to be strong, macho.
I used to be a lot of things, but I'm not now. I'll tell you something. This macho thing is overrated. Just people trying to be macho, show that they've got grit. That's about all they end up with.
Okay, that's Clint Eastwood right there, of course. The sentimental music in the background is very appropriate for what is a very sentimental, manipulative, and not very good movie. The boy has a fighting cock, rooster, that he is taking with him, and that's the chicken is named Macho. And at one point, they stop in a beautiful, idyllic Mexican country town. There is even a romantic interlude with a widow there. None of the film is even scarcely believable, and the performances are adequate. Some of the filmmaking, the basic view of the landscape, which was actually shot in New Mexico in the United States, is attractive, and it has a very positive view of Mexico and Mexican culture. 2.5 stars. There are some scenes of violence and threat, but it deserves the PG-13 rating. Another big movie released just in the last few days is Dear Evan Hansen. It's only in theaters, but it's an adaptation of a multi-Tony Award-winning play. And it's about a boy who lives with his single mom, who's played by Julianne Moore. And he is deeply isolated, an outcast, and very insecure. He has a therapist. He takes various antipsychotic medication. And, of course, teenage mental illness is a very real problem in America, which is why the Broadway musical, with music by the same songs, by the same composers who did La La Land songs, and for The Greatest Showman with Hugh Jackman, the P.T. Barnum movie, those guys have teamed again to provide songs of this story of this young man who ends up being confused as the best friend of a classmate who commits suicide. Listen.
Connor wanted you to have this. Dear Evan Hansen, he wrote it to you.
His last words. Connor took his own life.
I'm sorry, Connor didn't write this.
No, please.
We didn't think Connor had any friends.
Are you really going to tell these people that the only thing they have left of their son is a letter that you wrote to yourself?
So, you and Connor, tell us something, please.
That's Amy Adams, who plays the mother of the dead boy. What happened is he had intercepted a note that Evan Hansen had written to himself, because his therapist is telling him, write letters to yourself, encouraging yourself, dear Evan Hansen. And the film is watchable and often very touching. It certainly goes for a tear-jerking effect, and I think for many people it will work. It has been widely criticized for two things. Number one, I think, is entirely justified. The film is much too long. It drags on and on. The music is again, touching and serviceable, as you'd think, from these talented folks. But the second item of criticism, besides it being too long, is that Ben Platt, who plays Evan Hansen, is not 17, as he's supposed to be on screen. He's 27. And it didn't bother me enormously, but it has bothered many other folks at the same time. The cast is capable. There is a a touching relationship with a young lady who is the sister of the boy who commits suicide, who Evan is sweet on. And generally, there's a particularly fine performance and a beautiful performance of the best song in the score involving Julianne Moore. Three stars for Dear Evan Hansen. It's hard to imagine. You may feel frustrated by aspects of the film, but you'll be moved by it. Eyes of Tammy Faye is about Tammy Faye and Jim Baker, who were phenomenally successful televangelists in the 1970s and 80s. Though in this film, with Andrew Garfield playing Jim Baker and Chastain playing the Tammy Faye Baker, the lead character, it's hard to see how they ever achieved that level of success. Listen.
Anyone who's hurting or they feel like they've been left out, God has a plan for us.
What'd he tell you to do this time?
Jim will preach and I'll sing.
God has a voice in this fight.
Who's he fighting?
Liberal agenda, homosexual agenda.
Faith isn't political.
You can't talk to him like that.
Jerry Falwell is a powerful man, Tammy Faye.
She's a firecracker, Jim.
We're not doing anything wrong, though.
Is that a question?
It's not really a question. Jim Baker ended up going to prison. He was sentenced to 45 years. He didn't serve that long. He's back again now. This is an entirely one-sided view of the whole phenomenon of televangelism. It's very negative view, as you might expect. And they're not so much performances here as impersonations with multiple layers of makeup. And it's very hard to feel much sympathy for these people who are abusive, not very bright. And look, whatever you think of Jim and Tammy Faye Baker, they obviously had more to offer to their many, many followers than this film would ever indicate. It's again being applauded for taking on a serious subject, but it doesn't take it on seriously, leaves a gigantic amount out of the story. Two stars for a film that is actually kind of difficult to sit through at times because of the level of self-destructiveness. Another film, and it's that's in theaters, Eyes of Tammy Faye. And it's rated PG-13, though it probably should be R for some of the depravity in the story. Hudson is not rated. It's an independent film. It's a film festival favorite that has done very well. And it's about two cousins who were reunited in an errand to dispose of the ashes of the mother of one of them. It ends up being touching. It would be family friendly. They run into a hitchhiker who gives a lovely performance. For an independent, low-budget, audacious little film, three stars for Hudson. There will be more in the world of movies. I hope more in the world of political progress coming up Monday, including an Alaska legislator who has shared links to a Holocaust denial website while comparing Biden to Hitler. That and much more coming up in This Greatest Nation on God's Green Earth.